The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
La na 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 na, la na 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 na, Larry
O'Connor. Okay, Larry O'Connor. This is appropriate pop music for Larry O'Connor. Do I know Larry O'Connor? I know Larry O'Connor well. Generalissimo, Dwayne, do you know Larry O'Connor?
Oh, very well.
Very well?
Very well.
Did he guest host for the Hugh Hewitt Show?
Oh, he's guest hosted for us 50, 60 times in the past.
Yeah. What was his behavior when I wasn't there and he was the guest host?
Flighty is the word that kind of comes
erratic.
To mind. Erratic, flighty, yeah.
Occasionally loses temper?
Sometimes.
Sometimes? Do you ever throw anything?
Yeah. In fact, at our old studio, I think there's a bongo mark in the wall.
That's exactly. I was going to confirm it. Was Kurt Schlichter in the studio yesterday?
He was.
He was. And Colonel Kurt Schlichter is a colonel in the United States Army?
He is. Or okay. Retired.
Retired and reserved. Did Colonel Kurt speak about Larry O'Connor yesterday?
Oh, yes.
To you directly?
I recall him saying something to Adam about
you Larry. Heard this clearly, though? You have to explain the setup of the studio.
Yes.
You hear everything Kurt says.
Correct. Yeah. The talk studio where the host or the guest host sits is clearly wired so I can hear everything in there.
Okay, does Kurt Schlichter know Larry O'Connor?
Oh, very well. They were at Breitbart together for years.
Did Kurt discuss guest hosting with you or Adam, the engineer, yesterday and doing so recently?
Yes, he did.
Did Kurt Schlichter say anything about Larry O'Connor's capacity for drink?
I heard Kurt say something to Adam about Larry always being the last one to pass out at the CPAC parties.
Now, I believe you specifically discussed with Kurt, and let's make it clear, I discussed this with Dwayne before this segment because I was shocked to hear it, and so I have knowledge of what he's about to say. But I believe that Kurt told you something specific about the condition of Larry's studio the last time he was in it.
He told me it's pretty much like Delta House out of Animal House.
So he told you that, and he told you that directly?
Yes.
All right. So did actually, we have some evidence I would like to play for the audience about Larry O'Connor and show prep. Can we play that, Adam?
I'm sorry. I'm not used to reading things.
All right. So that's actually on tape. Can we play that again for the audience?
I'm sorry. I'm not used to reading things.
All right. So yesterday, did Kurt Schlichter confirm to you, Dwayne, Larry O'Connor's lack of show prep?
Well, not to me directly, but to Adam, he confirmed he doesn't do any show prep.
Did you hear that clearly?
Oh, very, very clearly, yes.
And Adam refuses to come on the air to discuss that, but does that give you any reason to doubt what you yourself heard?
Oh, not at all. I you know, 100% credibility with the colonel.
And when you look back on the times that Larry O'Connor guest hosted for me, and just general media reports about Larry O'Connor and show prep, would you say that Colonel Kurt's assertion of Larry's lack of show prep is consistent with our evidence and your past experience?
Very much so.
All right. Do we have any evidence that we can play of Larry O'Connor's ability to sing, please?
A law was made a distant moon ago here. July and August cannot be too hot. And there's a legal limit to the snow here in Camelot.
So I think the audience can judge that we know a little bit about Larry O'Connor's voice. Did Kurt Schlichter say anything to you about Larry singing in the studio?
Well, he didn't say anything to me.
What did he say to Adam?
He basically told Adam he can't carry a tune if he had a pail.
Did you overhear anything else he told Adam about Larry not being able to sing a damn? Did he say anything about his ability to remember the words? In other words, did he intimate that Larry O'Connor's memory is failing?
I think he may have said something to Adam about Larry's memory is failing.
In your opinion, based upon all you know about Larry O'Connor, Colonel Kurt Schlichter, O'Connor's appearances on our show and what Kurt Schlichter said about him, do you have an opinion as to whether or not Larry O'Connor's memory is failing?
I can't be entirely sure on that. He was kind of in the other room, but yes, based upon what I overheard, yes.
What about on your own personal experience?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, memory is fair. Do you know if Larry listens to this show?
Oh, we do know that, yes.
How do we know that?
Well, we are living rent-free in his head because we know what he puts on Twitter.
Yes, we do have his Twitter feed. Do we have any tape of him referencing me?
I think so.
Larry doing stupid things again. Hi, Hugh Hewitt.
That's what I'm saying.
We're living in his head, rent-free. Yes. Can we play that again, Adam?
Larry doing stupid things again. Hi, Hugh Hewitt.
I have a report that Larry O'Connor's given to fits of anger and raging. Have you heard those reports?
Oh, absolutely. He goes through producers like a Delta wheel through a cotton field, like Murphy Brown goes through secretaries, like Kamala Harris goes through speechwriters. Oh, absolutely.
I've been told that George H.W. Bush on a cigarette boat wasn't faster than Larry O'Connor going through producers and guest hosts.
That could be true.
And so, all told, is Kurt Schlichter a reliable witness?
Oh, 100%.
And what you have said today about what you heard about what Kurt Schlichter told you and your experience and what you overheard him telling to Adam, Larry O'Connor should be off the air?
I think there's no other conclusion you can reach.
And barred from ever being on the air again?
Clearly.
Okay, I think that's persuasive. I believe that's conclusive, and I want to submit that to the record on YouTube. And we will continue this hearing about Larry O'Connor at another time. Thank you, Dwayne, for your testimony today. Thank you, America, for listening. I'll be back. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside Studio Winterthur. I am back in Maine. After driving about 20 hours on Sunday and Tuesday with the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt, I was over in Chautauqua, New York. And those of you who know about the Chautauqua movement know that the mothership is in Chautauqua, New York. So Advocates for Balance had me over on Monday to give an address on politics in 2022 for an hour at the old Anthony M. Hotel. Beautiful, beautiful old hotel. I love Chautauqua. I just love it. Second time I've been there, I was once on their main stage, 3 or 4 years ago, and had a wonderful time, got a standing ovation from a very, very left of center crowd. But it's also got, I would guess, Chautauqua is 60% Democrats and 40% Republicans. It might be like my church, but very respectful and a very great ovation a few years ago. This time, at the beginning of the week, they had Fareed Zakaria from CNN, and I didn't go. I was preparing my own remarks and had a wonderful reception for a couple hundred people in the old Athenaeum Hotel. And Advocates for Balance at Chautauqua, wonderful people, ABC. They're trying to bring in, and they are bringing, and I'm glad I got to go first. I was the first speaker of the summer. Because they're bringing in, like, Jason Riley and Molly Hemingway. So it's best to lead off with that group. That group brings in the best speakers of any group I know in the United States. And ABC, thank you. We had a wonderful time. And we just took a look at people trying to fly anywhere at any time in the United States right now. And it's about 620 miles, 650 miles, maybe. I actually didn't set the odometer. I'm not very good about that, so it's a guess. The drive to Chautauqua from Maine. And then to turn around and come back. But it was wonderful. We had a blast. And yesterday morning, of course, all of you know you inherit the leave times for travel from your parents. So if your parents are late leavers, you become a late leaver. And if your parents are like my parents, early leavers, you leave early. Like, I never saw the end of a Browns game from 1965 to 1974. It just didn't happen. And then I've never seen the end of any game unless I'm with someone who insists that we stay to the end of a game, because that's just in your water. My dad wouldn't stay if it's 3-3 in the eighth inning at Old Muni and the Indians are playing. I won't stay now if it's 3-3 in the eighth inning and the Guardians are playing. I will stay at the end of the Browns Super Bowl if and when they ever play professional level football again, because I think Deshaun Watson is going to get suspended for 2 years, but I'm a pessimist. I like to prepare myself. Anyway, we left at 4 a.m. yesterday because that's what Dad Hewitt did. You know, if the sun was up, we were late. And I don't know if you had a dad like that when you had to go on a summer trip, you know, We went to D.C. We went to Virginia Beach. Even when we went to Ashtabula, which is only an hour away, if we were going up for a few weeks at Pillow Beach in Saybrook, as we did for many, many years. And that's most like Chautauqua. Chautauqua is like falling through a rabbit hole, and I'm back in Pillow Beach in Saybrook circa 1961 and running around on the beach. And the kids are in kids' club. They didn't have kids' club at Pillow Beach, but basically you got tossed out of the cottage, and you showed up 12 hours later hungry and asking for a grilled cheese. That's the way it worked. You got a hot dog or a hamburger with sand in it. That's Chautauqua. So we had a grand old time, and I want to thank Kurt Schlichter for coming in. I understand Dwayne overheard him saying a lot of things about Larry O'Connor, and I'm gonna cross examine Dwayne about that in the fourth segment today. Kurt Schlichter was in for me, and he's a colonel, mind you, and what he had to say to Dwayne, and Dwayne overheard him saying some things to Adam. And to Jacob about about Larry O'Connor that I think I should bring to your attention. That will be in the fourth segment today. Let me begin, though, with the news. The news is important, even though the stuff that we heard, well, Dwayne was telling me before the show what Colonel Kurt said about Larry, or what actually sometimes it's what Dwayne overheard Kurt telling Adam about Larry. That's stuff you need to know about. That's in the fourth segment of this hour, so you don't want to miss that, because it's explosive. It's explosive stuff, because Larry O'Connor used to guest host on this show, and I don't know how, after I've heard what Dwayne heard Kurt say about Larry, or what Dwayne overheard Kurt saying to Adam about Larry, I don't know if I can ever have Larry O'Connor guest host anywhere. I think we might have to seize his phone. I just think we need to actually go inside the O'Connor studio and get more testimony as to what people have heard about Larry. But first, the good news. Joe O'Day won in Colorado last night. Now, you've heard Joe O'Day a lot on this show, and Joe O'Day can beat Michael Bennett. There are two invisible senators running. Senator Cortez Masto in Nevada, you've never heard of her, neither of Nevadans. I'm on right now in Las Vegas, and you don't know it, but she's your senator. Adam Laxalt's going to beat her. And then the other Casper the Ghost is Mike Bennett, who is a senator allegedly from Colorado. And nobody knows who he is in Colorado. Joe O'Day is one of the great candidates. I mean, I just love Joe O'Day. Joe O'Day builds things. He's a lot like me in this respect, in that he's Catholic. Because that's about all we have in common. Joe O'Day is a great conservative Republican businessman who said, okay, enough of this stuff. I'm going to run for the United States Senate. Somebody who knows how to build things has got to go there. And Joe O'Day builds roads and bridges and stuff like that. And he employs 300 Coloradan families, and he's a great candidate. He's a super candidate. Democrats are scared to death of him. They spent tens of millions of dollars to try and nominate an unelectable Republican, like they're going to do in Missouri. They're going to spend money on Greitens. They're going to cross over and vote for Greitens, who can't win. I hope you all know that. Eric Greitens cannot win. He will not win. But Eric Schmidt, the attorney general, can and will win. And I think Eric Schmidt is ahead right now. I wish a couple of the other candidates would drop out. They're not going to win. I think Eric Schmidt's going to win. But in any event, Eric Greitens, I will go to work on Eric Schmidt now, having got a little push for Joe O'Day. Joe O'Day won yesterday. That's great. That's so super. I think that is that's a takeaway for Republicans come November. Because Coloradans, they got to drive a long way, and they're just going to be very upset. To prepare for this speech in Chautauqua, I looked at Joe Biden's numbers. I had no idea his Real Clear Politics average is below 40%. That's the average approval, somewhere as low as 33% and 34%. These are lows not reached since Richard Nixon the week before his resignation. Also, Republican Mike Flood won in Nebraska's first congressional district, so he'll be taking the chair there soon. I've never heard of Halsey, not once in my entire life. Now, my pop music stops in about 1980, so that's why my playlist is either John Ondrasik or stuff from 1980. That's why the Madison Cafe in Albany yesterday, where we stopped for breakfast, was so wild. Okay, if you get up at 4 a.m. in Chautauqua, you're rolling into Albany I've never been to Albany before. Albany figures very heavily in the history of the United States, mostly for bad, because they've got corrupt governors like Andrew Cuomo or absurd governors like Mario Cuomo or great governors like Nelson Rockefeller, who was great for New York and bad for the country. And he was kind of an ornery guy. And then George, what's his name? He was on the debate stage. Pataki. George Pataki was a good governor. Lee Zeldin won yesterday in New York. And Lee Zeldin would make a pretty good governor. Here's what I have to tell you about the New York Thruway, 90. I used to drive the 90 two or three times a year to go from Warren, Ohio to Boston, Massachusetts to go to Harvard. And in the summer, it's great. It's a great road in the summer, a super road in the summer. In the winter, you don't want to be on the 90. Except for one thing this time, because they've had governors, the Democratic governors forever. All of the gas station stops are under construction. All the rest stops, you know, if you're on a turnpike, if you're paying for it, if you're on one of the interstates, you don't want to pull off because you could end up in Never Never Land in the middle, like 422 in Ohio, if you pull off the turnpike. You want to pull into a rest area and then pull back on. But none of them, they're all, at least two out of three are torn down. Andrew Cuomo's legacy to the state of New York is that summer travel involves like gas stations with lean-tos on them because you can't, and you cannot get a cup of coffee. But so we had to actually go get breakfast in Albany, and I've never been in Albany, and I've left Albany. If Lee Zeldin wins, I'll go back. So Lee, come on the show, because I got a lot of stations in New York. And I'm here to tell you, you don't want to vote for Kathy Hochul, the accidental governor. Because nothing's built along the 90. But the Madison Cafe had the most interesting playlist about 1 minute into sitting down. Fetching Miss Hugh and I look at each other. What is this playlist? It's like from junior high and high school. And then it made no sense to us. So I grabbed my Shazam and I Shazammed a few things. So today's playlist is courtesy of the very, very wonderful Madison Cafe in Albany, which has a great restaurant, great servers, but really odd music. Stay tuned, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Good morning, America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt live back in the studio to the north. I am glad to. It's Governor Hour today. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem's coming up at the bottom of the hour, but I begin with Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves. Governor, welcome. I think it's your first time on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. It's great to be on. It's a great day in Mississippi.
Well, thank you. You know, Senator Wicker comes on often because we like to keep abreast of matters defense. And Mississippi, of course, part of the great naval tradition of Mississippi is building ships that we need all over the United States and the world. But, Governor, all eyes are on Mississippi because of the Dobbs case. You've served as the treasurer of Mississippi, the lieutenant governor. You're the governor now. You keep winning Mississippi. I think you'll be in office in Mississippi forever. But tell us about how Dobbs came to be and then what happened after the court in the course of deciding Mississippi's 15-week ban on abortions actually threw out Roe v. Wade and Casey, and therefore a trigger law went into effect. What's the state of the law in Mississippi today?
Well, the state of the law today is that we had a trigger law that passed the Mississippi legislature back in 2007. And it's really an interesting story because in 2007, we actually had a Democrat Speaker of the House and a Democrat Chairman of the Public Health Committee in the House of Representatives. Just kind of speaks to, when you listen to the rhetoric on the other side these days, how far the Democrat Party has moved to the left on this issue. But our trigger law says that once and if Roe v. Wade is overturned, that our attorney general then has the responsibility to certify that fact. And then 10 days later, our trigger law will go into effect, which outlaws abortions in all cases with the exception of rape and the life of the mother. Now, the Jackson Women's Health Organization, the exact same one that we were fighting with in Dobbs, filed a suit in state court on Monday afternoon after our attorney general made that certification. And so we've got a court battle to deal with in the state courts, but ultimately that will get to the Mississippi Supreme Court, and I'm confident that the court will, in fact, just as the U.S. Supreme Court said, there is no guaranteed right to an abortion in the U.S. Constitution. There is no guaranteed right to an abortion in the Mississippi Constitution, and that trigger law hopefully will go into effect approximately 7 days from today.
So, Governor, tell us a little bit about the specifics. Rape, is the incest included in the exceptions to the ban on abortion?
Incest is not currently included in the ban in the bill that passed in 2007. As you know, in many instances, first of all, incest is a very small number of the total cases. And in many of those instances where incest is involved, it's oftentimes an adult and a minor child that would actually be considered rape itself. So that's a conversation that we're going to continue to have in Mississippi and see if there are any other exceptions that should or need to be made. But at this time, no, it is not.
Now, is there any intention on the part of Mississippi to ban contraception, as some of the left have said, is on the table after Dobbs? That's absurd, by the way. I teach constitutional law, and that is not, in fact, on the table, made expressly so by Justice Alito and in the concurrence by Justice Kavanaugh. Justice Thomas would like to revisit substantive due process, but that ain't happening. And so my question to you is there any move to legislate any ban on contraception, IUD specifically, or the morning after pill?
Let me just be clear. In Mississippi, we have no intention to restrict access to contraceptives. That is not a conversation that we are having, nor is it a conversation that we intend to have. In fact, the next phase of the pro-life movement is not about banning contraceptives, but it is about continuing to create a culture of life, to provide for that expected mother, to make sure that we are providing resources for every child and doing everything in our power for those babies that perhaps are not wanted for whatever reason, that we find those babies a forever home. And for those of us that go to church every Sunday morning, and that's a vast majority of Mississippians, we have a challenge, and that's one of the things that we have to work together as a faith community to give back. And to me, that's the next phase of the pro-life movement, and that's where we are focused.
Would you ever support any attempt to criminalize a woman to make it her the subject of criminal prosecution if she secures an abortion illegally in the state?
Well, that's certainly, we have no intention to do that. You know, the way in which our laws work is because we have now made abortion illegal, we have a state medical licensure board. And that state medical licensure board ensures that the thousands and thousands of physicians in our state follow our state laws and follow acceptable medical practices in the practice of medicine. If you choose not to do that, then you lose your medical license. And that is the way in which we in our state plan to monitor this and ensure that our laws are followed. It's through the medical licensing process.
Now, I also want to just run through the talking points of the left, all of which are wrong. They believe as well that same-sex marriage rights are under attack as a result of this. I don't believe that there is a single state legislature that is remotely close to passing an attempt to repeal the Obergefell ruling. Is there such an effort underway in Mississippi?
I'm aware of no such effort. I'm not aware of any bill similar to that being filed, and if it was filed, I'm certain that it has not even moved beyond the committee process in one of the two chambers in our state legislature.
Now, since I'm also talking to a governor, and Doug Ducey is a good friend of mine, and I know you've been a part of the RGA forever, and I know that all Republican governors agree with pretty much everything you've just said in terms of never criminalizing conduct by the women, applying any new abortion or trigger law to physicians, and of course, supporting pregnant mothers. I would like to see additional legislation to assist women who are pregnant and do not know what to do, and to criminalize abuse of such women. Because one of the correct apprehensions is that young women are afraid of abusive parents when they are found to be pregnant. That is a concern of many women. That is absolutely legitimate. Young girls especially might be afraid of their parents. I think sometimes wrongly, but they might be fearful of that. Would you support efforts to protect young women who find themselves pregnant and under Mississippi law obliged to carry to term?
Well, there's no question that we must not only protect those women, we have to make sure that we are building an infrastructure wherein we can provide the resources that they need. And that's one of the things that I'm most proud of that Mississippi has done in our effort to create that culture of life. We passed, I believe, the first law in the nation in which we provide tax credits now for any individual who makes a contribution to a pregnancy resource center. You see, in Mississippi, we have 37 pregnancy resource centers situated in every single region of our state. Those pregnancy resource centers have mostly volunteers, but also some have paid employees whose sole responsibility is if you are find yourself in a perhaps unwanted pregnancy or you find yourself pregnant and at a loss for exactly what to do, they have counselors that help you, that help walk you through the process and help try to find and make sure that you have the resources that you need. As you know, Hugh, government certainly needs to step up, but my view is that government is really not particularly good at doing things like that. That's why we have these private nonprofits that have caring people. And my message to women that find themselves in that position, because I know it can be very difficult, but my message to those individuals is, you know what? There are people who love you. There are people who love that mom. There are people in this state and across this country who love that unborn baby. And it's our responsibility as a faith community to step up and be there for those individuals in their difficult times of need.
Now, Governor Tate Reeves, we got a minute left. I want to cover the gun control case. New York's law was struck down. I do not believe Mississippi is one of the six other states that had discretion vested in bureaucrats as to whether or not to issue a carry permit in the event of someone concerned about their safety. What was your reaction to that decision by the Supreme Court?
It's another win for the Second Amendment. It's another win for the United States Constitution. And that's one of the things that when the former president was elected in 2016, he put people on the United States Supreme Court. And as you'll recall, that was a major issue in that campaign.
Decided it. It won him the election. Do you agree with me on that?
I think that's exactly right, Hugh. And the president did exactly what he said he was going to do and what the American people said that they wanted him to do, and that is he appointed people to the court that can read the Constitution and that can give the rights back to the people and to our in our case, in the Dobbs case, to allow for the elected representatives to allow democracy to work in the case of abortions and other areas. And so I thought it was a great win for
him. And I'm hoping today that the states get another great win in the EPA case because they don't have the authority to regulate gas, and Congress ought to do its job, not EPA make up rules. Governor Tate Reeves, thank you. Keep coming back from Mississippi. Stay tuned, America. I'll be right back on this Wednesday edition of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live in Maine, joined by the governor of South Dakota, Kristi Noem. Governor, welcome. Good morning. I'm playing Johnny Cash because your mother loved her.
I love Johnny Cash. So, yes, I was raised on his music. And good morning. Thank you for inviting me to be with you today.
Well, I love your book. Not My First Rodeo is a brand new autobiography by Governor Noem. It's in bookstores everywhere. It's already at number 36 at Amazon by the time the show is over, about 3 hours hence. I'm sure it'll be in the top 10. Governor, but I want to begin with the line. I love your dad, by the way. We would have gotten along fine. We don't complain about things, Kristi. We fix them. I don't know. I hope one of my three kids, if they ever write anything, write something half as appreciative of me as you are of your dad.
Well, and I think that's what is remarkable about him. He was tough. You know, he gave us some pretty challenging things when we were growing up. And I would say he wasn't exactly a warm and fuzzy, but we respected him. He worked harder than anybody else I ever knew. He loved us. And boy, he sure taught us a lot about values that help you really appreciate the gift we have in this country. So, yeah,
well, you know,
I was pretty blessed.
I want you to tell two stories about him before we move on to other stuff. One is the tapes that you found, and the second is when you and your brother could not get the calf to the cow. Because I just laughed. I mean, I just laughed about that. So first, tell us about the tapes and tell us about the cow.
Well, I'm the third of four children. And when my dad passed away, I was in college. My older brother and sister were living out of state. My younger brother was still in high school. So dad died at the age of 49 in an accident on our operation. I tell that story in the book as well. And it was devastating for us. He was kind of Superman. We had such a large operation. We farmed thousands of acres, had hundreds of head of cattle, several other businesses, and he knew everything, and it was all in his head. So when he died, we didn't really know how to even do the next 24 hours, much less the rest of our lives. And I came home and took over as general manager, was trying to make a bunch of decisions, had a bunch of people working for me that didn't necessarily want to be working for a 22-year-old girl. And, it was challenging. I remember thinking every day, I just wish I could ask Dad. I just wish I could ask Dad. And then months after he passed away, I decided I'd finally clean out his pickup. If anybody knows farmers or ranchers, they live out of their pickups, and everything important is in there. I went with a box out to his truck finally, decided I could handle it, and started to clean out the console in the middle of his pickup, and found all these little tapes, little dictation tapes, which was strange, and a little tape recorder like doctors talk into, and put a tape in, started listening, and it was my dad's voice. I'll tell you, my dad was not a talker. I mean, he was a doer. So all of a sudden it was him talking about what field had the best soil type for a certain variety of corn, what cattle would do better in the heat, what to do if the farm ever got into financial trouble, which neighbors we could trust, which ones we couldn't, what he thought of us kids. There was tapes in that console that were 10 years old that he'd moved from pickup to pickup, and it was the answer to every question that I'd ever thought I needed out of my dad, and it was right there in his own voice. I just remember sitting there thinking, what a miracle it was. And then also, it was the first time I think I ever felt peace. Like, if God loves me this much, that he would literally give me the answer to every question I could possibly have and straight from my dad, then we're going to be okay.
We're going to be fine. I'm going to come back to your dad in a moment. I want to do the cow story, though. I got to preface it. You left one detail out, which listeners of this show will know. Was the cow brown or was it black?
She was black. Everything on our place was black.
All right. The reason I asked that is I once asked the world champion bull rider whether it made a difference if the bull was brown or black, and he said that's a stupid question after he assured me there were no stupid questions. But now I've determined that black cows are actually, and I would assume bulls, are more dangerous than brown ones. Tell people about that, because it's hilarious.
It is. My dad just constantly gave us things to do that were kind of crazy for little kids, and expected us to do them, not to fail. He sent me and my brother over to get a cow in the barn and make her calf suck, because the cow had had a fever after giving birth, wouldn't let the calf suck and eat. And so we had to lock her in a chute and try to force the calf to suck until she liked, the mother cow would accept her. Anyways, we were little, we were young, and, probably, 8 to 10, 12 years old around in that time frame. But we went over there, and as soon as we'd get in the corral, she'd charge us and put us right back up over the fence. We'd get in and try to chase her in the barn, and she'd turn around to chase us. And we tried and tried, went back to the shop to tell Dad several times we just couldn't get her. He'd send us back to do it again. And finally, at the end of the day, he was mad. We went back, told him we couldn't do it. And he put on his overshoes, furious at us, stomped out of the shop, went over to the corral, climbed into the corral. That cow immediately charged him 100 miles an hour, and he wrapped his arm around her neck and put her in a headlock.
And punched her nose, but it didn't work.
No, I think, who puts a cow in a headlock, first of all? And I remember Rob and I just sitting on the fence thinking, this is insane. And he was going around and around the corral with his arm around this cow's neck. He was punching her in the nose, trying to get her to slow down. And he tripped on his overshoes. She went down on top of him, kneeled on his chest, and started to rub him in the dirt. And we thought he was dead. We got it. We went off and chased the cow off of him, got him up. He came over to us at the corral, and he looked at us and said, well, I had her right where I wanted her until I tripped on my overshoes.
Yeah, I love that. I also love that he would wake you up in the morning by yelling upstairs, get up, more people die in bed than anywhere else. And I got to read from page, this is about Christy Noem more than it is about your father. Don't ever sell land, Christy. God isn't making any more land. That's your father, and I agree with that. But then you continue, hearing Dad's voice in my head seemed natural, because the truth is I'm a whole lot like him. I'm not afraid of hard work. I am strong and even more strong-willed. As my husband, Brian, likes to say, you always pick the hardest option. There will be three options, and you always pick the most impossible one. That's really hard to be married to. Turns out Brian is pretty tough, too. We've been married 30 years now. In a couple of weeks, next week, I celebrate my 40th anniversary. So congrats on 30.
Oh, wow.
But being tough just goes with, I mean, I only know South Dakota by reputation. Phillip, South Dakota is named for my brother-in-law's grandfather, Scotty Phillip, who saved the, he saved the buffalo. Yeah. I know all about South Dakota and the buffalo, Scotty Phillip. But I want to know, what does tough mean being a governor?
Well, I think it means knowing what's right and doing it. You know, anytime you're in an elected office, there's going to be political pressure to do things for different reasons. You know, you're going to have people that are on all sides of an issue and have a reason to benefit from whatever decision you make, and they will do everything they can to try to get you to sway their way. So I guess, you know, being a governor, you're the CEO. You know, you're running the state, making decisions every day. It's knowing what's right, and for the people that are out there, and according to what your job is and nothing more, and doing it, no matter what the political pressure is. That we saw in unprecedented ways the last few years across this country, political officials give in just because they, you know, were weak. They were pressured by outside influences to make different decisions, and it ended up crippling their states and their people that live there.
We're going to come back to that. Before we do, I want to talk about Kristi Noem as mom, because I found your story about Booker. He is your youngest, right? I got that right.
He is your youngest.
Booker is learning to drive, ride. I say drive. I've been on a horse twice in my life, Governor. Booker, you have to explain to him why he cannot scream when he's on the top of a horse. I mean, he really didn't want to be on that horse, and he was screaming, and your daughter called. And you explained it better. You explained it so that I understand it. And I know a horse has got four legs, and that's about it. Would you tell people why you cannot scream? Well, you got Booker back on the horse because you explained it to him.
Well, it was interesting because, you know, parenting had to change when I got elected to go to Congress. You know, I did a lot of my parenting long distance during the week because I was gone. So Booker was out practicing for his horse show that he had to get ready for. His sister was helping him. He was a little guy, probably 7, 8 years old. And he had been screaming on top of his horse because he did not want to be practicing and yelling at his sister. She called me. I said, get him in front of Skype, get him in front of the computer. And when he showed up on my screen in my office in Washington, D.C., he had tears running down his face. He was mad at his sister, mad at his horse, and didn't want to do it. And I just explained to him what a horse feels when someone is screaming and sitting on their back. I explained to him that, you know, what did, you know, the horse's greatest enemy is really a mountain lion. Mountain lions attack horses, drop on them from trees and from above. A horse fights with their teeth and with their feet. But the most vulnerable area of a horse is their back, the base of their neck. And that's where oftentimes a mountain lion will attack, knowing they can break their neck and paralyze them. And I said, when you're sitting on top of that horse screaming like that, what do you think you sound like? And of course, Booker had never heard this before. And he said, I sounded, I bet, like a mountain lion. I said, yes, you did. And what did that horse do? He said, well, Lexus just stood there. I said, are you telling me that horse loved you so much that she thought a mountain lion could be jumping on her back, ready to kill her, but she loved you so much she just stood there and protected you and didn't run off and hurt you? And he started to cry, and he said, yes, I'm so sorry, Mom, I'm so sorry. And I said, don't you ever scream on top of a horse again. And you get out to that arena, and you apologize to Lexus, and you tell her you are so sorry, and get back on that horse, and when we get home, we're going to talk about this. And Cassidy said, she called me later and said, I don't know what you said to him, but he went out to that arena, wrapped his arms around the front leg of that horse and laid his head in her chest and cried and apologized and said he was so sorry and got on and practiced hard the rest of the day. So I think a lot of it is just, you know, it's understanding animals and working with them is understanding people.
Yeah, you know, Governor, it's great parenting. It's also great writing. Now, when I read books, I look to see whether there's a ghost at work. And you may have had some help, but no one comes up with that story or relates it the way that you relate it unless they wrote the book. And that's why when Attorney General Barr was on, I loved it. I like books that are written by the author. So you obviously did a lot of work on this. I don't know if you wrote every word, if you had editor help, whatever, but that story is a really memorable story. And the book is full of that. I got to ask you, a lot of people will look at a book by Kristi Noem coming out in 2022 and say, she's running. I mean that's what they'll say. She's running. She's running in 2024. Are you running?
I'm not running. No, I'm running for re-election of governor.
You're going to win re-election. Come on. I'm talking about the presidential.
I haven't lost yet, so I'm planning on. I've run quite a few races, and I always win, so I'm determined to do that. You know, I think that the 2024 race will take care of itself. We got a lot of people interested in running for president. I would say this country does need new leadership. I'm not convinced it has to be me at all. I want to do what I can for my state and continue to do what I can to protect this country. But I'm not planning to run.
You're one of the, what? Wait, you're not planning to run?
I'm not planning on it. No, I think that there's probably 50 people out there that want to run for president right now from the Republican Party. I'm not convinced it has to be me.
Would you change your mind? What circumstances under which? I'm going to come back to the book, by the way, after the break. So don't worry about that. By the way, we have not said not my first rodeo 7 times. And Frank Luntz advised me in any book interview, the author has to say the title of the book, Not My First Rodeo 7 times. If you want people to remember Not My First Rodeo and go and buy Not My First Rodeo at Amazon. So there, I got Not My First Rodeo. Yeah,
it's my first rodeo. He should have told me that. Frank's a good friend.
Frank should tell you that. It's one of Luntz's words that work rules, and it's one of the most important books I've ever read, but Not My First Rodeo is really a good read. Are there circumstances that would lead you to change your mind and throw your hat in the ring, as you have often done, literally, in Not My First Rodeo?
I think President Trump is going to run, and if he runs, I'm going to support him. You know, his policies did fantastic things for our country. So
Nancy Pelosi's 1-6 hearings have not changed your mind at all?
No. I mean, half of that testimony I don't believe was even true or remotely close to reality. So it's ridiculous what's going on out there.
All right. I'm coming back for more specific questions because I have the Snow Queen with me. Whether you know it or not, Kristi Noem is Snow Queen of Montana as well as governor. We'll talk about that after the break. Don't go anywhere. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show.
I just never took the time. But you were always on my mind.
Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. If you read Governor Kristi Noem of South Dakota's new book, Not My First Rodeo, you'll find out her mom loved Willie Nelson. And her father is often on her mind, so I thought this was the perfect bump. Welcome back, America. Governor Noem and I are going to talk about 4 things before I let her go. But don't forget, the book is called Not My First Rodeo. It's a joy to read. It's available at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, every bookstore in America. If you get Not My First Rodeo, you'll thank me for it. Page 184, Governor. If you've stayed with me this far, and I did, you know, I regard my time growing up on a working farm as the single most significant preparation I had for serving as governor. Funny though it may sound, the second most significant experience, and it is admittedly a distant second, was the year I spent as South Dakota Snow Queen. I say that with complete sincerity. Okay, so what is a Snow Queen, Governor Noem?
Oh my goodness. Well, in South Dakota, every high school or local community used to have these local competitions that were interviews, speeches of ambassadors that were called the local Snow Queens. And you learned about your community, and it was a leadership program. And if you won your local contest, you went to the state competition in the wintertime, and they chose someone to represent the entire state. And you would spend the next year traveling around the country talking about South Dakota, how special it was, the wonderful things that we have and the people. And most of the senior girls in high school would compete in these competitions when I was a senior in high school. So I did it as well, along with all my friends, and happened to win the local and the state competition. So I ended up spending a year traveling and talking about South Dakota, and won some scholarships to the college that I attended. Got to use a car for a year and have several different opportunities. It was just interesting to me to be a farm girl and to win something like that, and then immediately turned into a challenge that taught me to speak and meet people and greet them and be an ambassador for our state.
That's what I think is amazing. It's like speech and debate, which I encourage every high school kid to do, because you got to be able to stand up and talk to people if you're going to make any impact on the world. And I think being a Snow Queen, did you get to Philip? I just want to make sure you've been to Philip, South Dakota.
Of course I went to Philip. I went to Philip quite often. Fantastic town.
Now I want to talk about 3 specific issues. These are specifics. The first, from page 176. For starters, there's a ridiculous stereotype that Republicans aren't supposed to care about the plight of Native Americans. I flatly reject that. You write in my first radio, I do care, and I simply wasn't going to stand by and do nothing. I think Republicans need every vote from every voting group, ethnic, religious, race, whatever. I want people everywhere, and you will go to the tribes and ask for their vote.
Absolutely. I've spent a lot of time with communities in our tribes, and my biggest contention has been with the leadership of the tribes. You know, they've at times kept me away from their communities, told me that if I went there without their permission, I'd be disrespecting them. And so, you know, that that situation has been difficult to manage because the tribal leadership at times can be corrupt. It can be very manipulative, trying to keep a lot of power and money to themselves and not share it with their people who are desperate and living in poverty and struggling with different challenges. And to keep others away from who want to help is just the wrong thing. So I do. I grew up, you know, in an environment. I had a foster brother who was Native American. My mother was extremely passionate about the culture, and I grew up, you know, learning a lot and knowing a lot about Native American culture and wanting to help them be successful just like anybody else.
So that is important. I want people to understand that because it's quite different from our legal approach to whether or not tribal sovereignty ought to impact a governor or a state's ability to reach every member of a state community, and that's being fought out in Oklahoma. Let me go to girls' sports, page 185. I have protected girls' sports my entire political career, you write, in Not My First Rodeo, and I have real results to show for my work. In Congress, I fought back when bureaucrats in the U.S. Department of Agriculture tried eliminating girls-only events in 4-H rodeos in 2018. I won. It's why we still have girl rodeo events in South Dakota. And you talk about my airtight bill to protect fairness in women's sports in early February 2022. This issue, I believe, is a 70-30 or 80-20 issue in America, but it doesn't get that because among elite opinion makers and legacy media, they believe that trans women ought to be able to compete in women's sports. I think it's 80-20 against that proposition because it's not fair. What do you find to be the reception to your bill, which in fact legislates biological women compete against biological women?
Well, I think it was widely accepted in the state of South Dakota, and people across the country certainly understand the fairness of this issue. It's the liberals that try to twist this into something else. You know, this bill is specifically about fairness. It's about science. It's about ensuring that our women can compete, have success, that they can go on and win scholarships, play professionally if they like to. It's nothing else than that. And the fact that we constantly have liberals trying to drag different topics and conversations into this and make it act like we're biased against certain individuals, that's just not true. It's about fairness. And for years, these same liberals argued for Title IX, and now they're undermining it with their political agenda that they're pursuing today. So I'm proud of South Dakota, proud of my record on this. I've even seen, you know, this issue was a little bit of a tough one for me because I've seen not only pressure from the left, but I also saw my friends and some of those on my right try to bully me into doing what was unwise that would have caused a bad law to be signed into law and put into court and be thrown out, which would have set bad precedent. So I'm proud of the route that we took to get this done and to do it right. And I've just learned that doing the right thing isn't always easy, and it's not always going to be applauded by your friends either.
Well, I am for the dignity of every human being. And if they are transsexual, I will support their lives and their happiness. But I am also very, very aware that a girl participating in sports or a young woman in college, it's not just that girl. It's that girl's coaches and teammates and family and friends and the media. And everybody should be involved because Richard Nixon signed Title IX 50 years ago. I know about Title IX. My daughter benefited from Title IX. I just can't understand people who don't understand the fairness of biological women competing against biological women.
No, I don't either. And I think they do understand it. I think they just want to undermine our entire system. I think that that's the real challenge, is that there's a wider agenda, and they do this. They try to pick on an issue that they think they can win on to build momentum to get a larger agenda put into place. So I would not let people think that it's as simple as that they don't understand the fairness of it. It's more about giving a preferential treatment to a socialist, agenda that really is the long-term goal.
Well, now let's talk about the left and the most important thing, which is the last 3 years in this country. Quote, I knew my principles for governing well before the global COVID-19 pandemic began in the spring of 2020. Stay transparent. No government's true limits. Trust the people. Trust the people, by the way, is Winston Churchill's quote. And I use it maybe weekly on here, trust the people. Now, I admired Tony Fauci. He was a guest on the show many times until I asked him to resign and he stopped coming on. Dr. Francis Collins. I admire him. Great Christian doctor, great scientist. And I had him on many times until he stopped coming on because I lost confidence in the CDC. They started to make stuff up and the FDA got stuff wrong and they clearly overreached and they were clearly unwilling to say when they were wrong and they were obviously wrong. I think that public health in America has fundamentally lost the confidence of the American people. Do you agree with me?
Yes, I do. In fact, it wasn't very long into the pandemic before I realized they were giving us information that wasn't accurate according to the research that I was doing. Talking to researchers all around the world, I spent a lot of time working with different experts who had studied viruses, how they spread, and a lot of that background and information just was not matching up with the recommendations that were coming out of Fauci. And as soon as, Mike Pence and President Trump had Fauci, and Dr. Birx up in front of the American people, I was questioning it a little bit to myself and to people around me just because they never were conservatives. They never were unbiased. I watched them for years run around Washington, D.C. with Nancy Pelosi and liberal people. So I wondered why we were giving credibility to people that whose history was not to be a part of a team and really do what was best for the American people. So, hindsight is 20/20, and I think that now we just have to go into every situation eyes wide open and do our own homework. That's the problem with this country today is everybody reads headlines. They take a soundbite and grab it and run, when really we have a responsibility to make our own decisions, to do our research, and to really hold people accountable. And that's what I think is my responsibility. I would hope the public would start to do that as well.
The fundamental problem of asymptomatic transmission is indeed a deep one. I'm pretty well read in the 1918 mm-hmm. influenza. George W. Bush influenced me a lot by recommending the book on the great influenza. Asymptomatic transmission of a deadly disease is a real public health problem. My real public health problem is now I don't trust anybody. I genuinely think Dr. Fauci has got to go. They've got to start over, because if we have another pandemic, God forbid, who are we going to believe on the science?
And that's the problem. I've said that for, over a year and a half now, that they are undermining the public's perception of health officials. Who will we listen to? They've been discredited. And that's the biggest concern we're going to have in the future is who will the public listen to now as the experts when they really need to have the right information?
Now, let me close on some generally different views. Doug Ducey's a good friend of mine. He's the only man I've ever held or woman that I've ever held a fundraiser for in our own home. My wife and I hosted Doug in our own home because I like him so much. And he's been the RGA chair for a couple of times now, and you know him well. Governor DeSantis is a hero in many people's eyes. There are many good Republican governors, and you get together at the RGA. I saw Glenn Youngkin for the first time down at the RGA. Then there's the Democratic Governors Association. They got all the bad governors. I mean, really, literally everywhere things have gone wrong are blue states. And then you all get together at the RGA. Okay, so all the governors come together. What's it like when you're talking to people who are flat out wrong on so many issues?
Well, the Democrat governors don't come to RGA. They come to the National Governors
right.
Association. And frankly, I quit going to those meetings. I did not think they were worth it. There wasn't great policy discussions. I do have conversations with Democrat governors from time to time on different issues. Like the Western governors, we all have the same fights on federal land. We have the same problems with overbearing regulations on Forest Service, Bureau of Land Management, maybe drought issues, water issues. So I might work with the Democrat governor on issues like that. But it's very difficult in this polarized society to really have good, productive conversations on policies with Democrats who've just embraced this extremism. It's very hard for them, I think, to have a moderated conversation with a Republican and still defend what's going on with this White House. And they've been much more standoffish. I guess to be fair, I probably have been too. I just find less and less that we have in common that we could work together on. But, we find some through the Western Governors Association just because we have some of the same challenges, and that's been helpful.
Governor, I want to end there. For 30 years, I've retired from the active practice of law now because I've been doing broadcasting the whole time. But I lawyered against the administrative state on behalf of landowners on 404 permits, on Endangered mm-hmm. Species Act, on clean air regulation. And I know what the federal government, the administrative state, is doing to landowners. Do you see them becoming more? We will have a decision in less than an hour from the Supreme Court on the EPA case. And I'm hoping that they uphold limiting the EPA's reach, because federal bureaucracies are never satisfied. Is that your experience?
Oh, it's a land grab every day. It's a power grab every day. So they're doing it through OSHA, through EPA, through these federal lands and regulations. And it's through compliance and penalizing producers and landowners out there if they don't fall in line with what they want. The 30 by 30 land grab is still a concern for me, that they want the federal government control of that percentage of land in the western part of the United States. So, yeah, that, I mean, you were on the front lines of really making sure that we're defending America as we know it.
The Federal Endangered Species Act is nothing but a violation of the Fifth Amendment taking clause, in my view. Do you have endangered species issues in South Dakota?
Not as much as in some other states, but I remember back when I was in Congress, they were talking about putting the diamondback rattlesnake on the endangered species list because they were interpreting the endangered species list to be endangered or threatened animals. And somewhere in Wyoming, they were having rattlesnake races as a part of a celebration in a western town, and they considered that to be threatening them if they were using them to race them down Main Street for fun, and they were going to put them on the endangered species list because of that activity. And that's just manipulating statute for a different agenda. That can you imagine if we had rattlesnakes protected and we
could... No, it's like wolves now or the California gnatcatcher or the leash bills. Yeah. I did it for 30 years. I could go on forever, but I know you have a book tour to keep going on. Governor Noem, congratulations on Not My First Rodeo, selling like hotcakes. I hope you have time for a book tour. I know being governor is kind of a busy thing, but congratulations. Not My First Rodeo, a wonderful read.
Oh, thanks so much. Thanks for chatting with me. And yes, I hope everybody will go out and buy it. It should be fun. It'll give you a little bit of understanding into how I make my decisions and why I do what I do. Thanks so much.
You know what it is? It is most like the book by Evan Thomas about Justice O'Connor called First. She also grew up on a ranch. And ranch girls are just different. I'm now persuaded by these two books. You're just different from the rest of us folks. So thank you very much, Governor.
Thanks so much.
Be well.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.